Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. One of the things that I've noticed since Bee's been gone is that, in addition to becoming a little barbarian, Ollie has gained weight. In retrospect, that doesn't surprise me. I just got in the habit of feeding him the same amount every day. In spite of the fact, he became a mature adult and his nutritional requirements naturally decreased. When he was 15 months old, I had him neutered, and that dropped his caloric requirements another 25%. So it's understandable that he's gotten a little bit chunky, and now he's on a diet, and I gotta admit, not really happy about it. But I try to make it as easy as possible for him, putting some of his food in interactive toys so he has to work to get it, and also doing more things like tossing his balls in the house so he gets more of a workout. Simultaneously, I received a newsletter that contained two articles that were either directly or indirectly related to nutrition, and specifically the problem of pet obesity in this country. And this caught my attention because I consider the weight issues of the American pet a major bond problem, and this aspect of the problem is rarely addressed. There were two publications cited in the newsletter, both published in 2008. One was a joint publication of the American Veterinary Medical Association and Hill's Pet Nutrition, and the other was the 10th Annual American Animal Hospital Association Survey of People and Pet Relationships. The AVMA Hills study indicated that in the early 1970s, as few as 9% of the cats and 3% of the dogs in this country were overweight or obese. By 1999, the number of obese cats and dogs had risen to 25%, and today 35% of all adult pets and 50% of the pets over 7 are overweight or obese. That particular survey listed the causes of pet obesity, mentioning that 60 to 70% of our dogs spend their days lying down with no physical activity. Neutering a pet tends to reduce energy needs by about 25%, and 70% of the owners report using food or treats to show affection. So there you go. I mean, that's pretty much old news. But let's look at the AAHA study done in the same year. One particular statistic that got a lot of attention was that 50% of us depend on a spouse or significant other for hugs and supports, which is no surprise. But what became the newsworthy event is that pets were more commonly listed as the source that people relied upon for support when things got really tough. In 1998, already in 1998, 76% of those surveyed admitted to speaking to their pets in a special high-pitched voice, which they referred to as their pet voice. And if any of you have taken your pets through training, there are many training classes that actually encourage this type of high-pitched voice. From an ethological standpoint, though, that high-pitched voice communicates submission. So now we have a large population of people who are communicating to their pets in a submissive tone of voice and who are simultaneously admitting that they will preferentially, depend on their pets for support in hard emotional times rather than other people. And 70% also say that they use food for treats. Now, when I put those facts together, my conclusion is no wonder we have a problem with pet obesity in this country. There's another significant statistic that came out of these studies that I think is relevant to this discussion. And that is that a large majority of pet owners, a whopping 81%, think that their pet is the appropriate weight. And this is in spite of the fact that approximately a third to nearly a half of all dogs and cats are overweight. So even though they're overweight, we can't see it. And this is why I think these programs that are aimed strictly at cutting back food and increasing exercise are missing the boat. Yeah, I can give you some really fascinating little nutrition facts, like for a 20-pound dog, a small oatmeal cookie is a caloric equivalent of a hamburger or a chocolate bar for a person, or that one potato chip for a 10-pound cat is a caloric equivalent of half a hamburger or half a chocolate bar. And you might go, ooh, or ah, man, I got to get that weight off that animal. And I could give you the list. I could give you the list of all the medical problems that all this weight is causing these animals. I could lay the guilt trip on you. Hell, when I was first in practice, I used to do it to people all the time, but I don't do it anymore. I don't do it because now I realize that it's not that simple. It's a bond issue. It's a projection issue. The idea that 70% of us use treats to communicate love to our pets is a really, really big part of it, just as it is with our kids. The idea that we need them so much, that we communicate with them, and we're actually in some circumstances being taught to communicate with them, either by the example of others in animal care professions or deliberately as part of training programs, we're being taught to communicate with them in a way that actually reinforces our dependency. All of these things are part of it. That's the starting point. The feeding too much, that's an effect. That's not a cause. I know I gave Ollie too many treats because I felt sorry for the way things were going. I felt badly because of all the time I was spending with B. That was my problem. But he had to pay the price for it. And now it's time for me to pull myself together and get him back on the track to health. Look at your pet as your pet and not through those potato chip or treat color glasses. Look at your pet in terms of weight. And if there's a little extra fat on there, and certainly if there's a lot, why don't you join me?
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.